Hello, my name is Sharma Pereira and I was invited by Lyft as part of their ongoing inquiry into what theatre can be to respond to the question, what is theatre to you? The following is my testimony in response, and it takes the form of two reflections. The first is entitled All Things to All Men and Women. For an Asian kid growing up in the tenements of 1960s Paddington, where the stucco houses were black speckled with soot and the disenfranchised of the world were being deposited in clumps under Brunel's soaring arches in the station, what possible significance could theatre have had? On the small number of occasions we went to stage shows, my mother took me, I think, to escape, to throw us into another existence for a couple of hours, to be entertained by experiences outside and alien to our own. Her preferred mode of performance was ballet. I was born during a prosperous diplomatic marriage that started life in Russia, where she'd been enchanted by the Bolshoi. And so, despite divorce reducing us to abject poverty in a strange land, we went every Christmas to Covent Garden or the Festival Hall to see the Nutcracker and Swan Lake. We saw a handful of plays too. We didn't go to glean meaning, but to escape meaninglessness, to immerse ourselves in something other. I grew up with no expectation that drama had relevance beyond spectacle, and there was no reason to revise that thinking when, quite clearly, there was nothing available at a theatre near me that touched on life as I knew it. It seemed to me that the issues that surrounded the merging of alien cultures were most commonly whittled down to exploring race through the vehicle of love. To my untutored eye, this line of fire, the exploration of cultural conflict through heartbreak, had already been well covered from Romeo and Juliet to Puccini's Madame Butterfly, later to spawn Miss Saigon, and Tennessee Williams' Orpheus Descending. Indeed, I still broadly hold that view, and yet it was these musings that opened my eyes to the obvious. I suddenly saw that through drama we could uncover universal truths which do have a direct bearing on individual experience, irrespective of individual history. It didn't have to have Asians, Paddington, David Bowie or Wet Look Boots in the storyline for me to get it. Difference is easy. What is much harder to uncover is new perspectives on the human condition through that which we share, to create through convergence and understanding, a point where planes of experience meet and overlap to create a wormhole into our consciousness. A film once made is finished, as is a book once written. But theatre is open to constant reinterpretation and exploration by successive generations with different agendas. It switches across continents and cultures and the values of the time. Romeo and Juliet is both historical and modern. The characters can be black and white, fat and thin, dog and cat, same sex. The underlying themes still have an application. This realisation has empowered me. I derive huge pleasure from live performance, be it large and reflective set pieces, Democracy, The Seagull, The House of Bernarda Alba, or life condensed into bite-sized slices of meaning on a smaller and less permanent platform, Mad Men and Specialists, Rivers of Fire, The Sugar Syndrome, Sanctuary, The Ramayan, Flush. If there is anything I would like to see that reflects my own ethnic and social background, it is more integrated casting, so that universal truths are explored and enacted by casts that reflect the broad brush of the text. It worries me that emerging writers may feel under commercial pressure to minute the inconsequential from their own backgrounds and cultures. While this makes good short-term entertainment, it's not, for me, what makes theatre so important. Think of those theatrical visions that have become iconic. Macbeth's fevered washing of his hands, Nora's maniacal tarantella in The Doll's House, the physical entrapment of Ham and Nell in Beckett's Endgame, sex at one remove in Patrick Marber's Closer. The provenance of the writer and the characters are incidental to the story and the meaning. Culture is amorphous, it is not carved in stone. Unlike the fixed arts, theatre responds to human evolution and change, to the interests and needs of those who access it. It is both abstract and figurative, a tool for exploring society, a window into the psyche. It encapsulates the energy and imprecise nature of the human experience. That, for me, is what sets it apart. My second reflection is called How Do You Pin a Wave Upon the Sand, which is a line from Rodgers and Hammerstein's Sound of Music. The sleight of hand that is live performance presents the most baffling of paradoxes. One minute it's here, a form of entertainment in real time and 3D close-up, where others are merely representations. Yet the next, it's gone, the fruits lost to us at the moment of revelation. There's no video you can take out in 5 years' time to check the detail. No dog-eared copy on a shelf somewhere, favourite passages highlighted for ease of access. Theatre, a medium in which the finer brushstrokes of life are exposed and examined in front of us, survives only in the memory of those who have witnessed it. When I was little, I saw very few dramas, and those that I did see were way beyond my understanding and too taxing to be of interest. Nonetheless, I have vivid memories of Don Quixote fighting windmills on stage in Man of La Mancha, and the all-male cast of The Royal Hunt for the Sun raising tensions as they beat drums and chests and chanted their way from stage right to stage left. During adolescence, it was the school trips that stuck in the conscious. David Essex in Godspell was a revelation, as was the abortive production of Macbeth at the Shaw Theatre, featuring a nude scene that reduced the entire fourth year to hysterics. As an adult, my understanding became a trifle more sophisticated, though I still can't work out why anyone needs to strip off in Shakespeare. There are seminal moments I hold dear. I cried for weeks after seeing Jordan, Anna Reynolds' moving play about infanticide at the Lillian Bayliss Theatre. I remember how the hairs on the back of my neck literally stood on end during a matinee performance at the National of John Osborne's Look Back in Anger. In my stomach I still get a clutch of excitement remembering my first Hamlet with Kenneth Branagh in the lead role. I was 30, but had no idea how the play ended. The interval was a painful endurance. Those memories are retained not as word pictures but as emotional imprints, as if the energy of the performance scorched my consciousness. I don't just think my way through performances that affected me, I feel. I have strong impressions of plays where I can no longer recall names of characters or actors or directors or even occasionally the playwright. Teeth and Smiles, Stevie, Children of a Lesser God, Perry Banier, who wrote these? And yet I retain their essence. Tom Stoppard's Arcadia, a play about chaos theory, still inspires me. I remember the way they lit the set at the Cottesloe. With each successive enlightenment, the glow seemed to increase. Conversely, the life-sized merry-go-round in the opening scene of Carousel at the same theatre struck me as such a profligate waste of money that I lost my ability to empathise with the production. All of these performances, and a thousand others, are catalogued as sensate snapshots in my mind's eye. Yet I don't remember a single line from any of them. Well, sod's law dictates I know the words to You'll Never Walk Alone, but that's thanks to football. Does it matter that I cannot recollect dialogue? I don't think so. The text is still there if I want to see the words, but it's the way speech is articulated and contextualised on stage that leaves the mark. I don't have to remember the exchanges in Athol Fugard, John Carney and Winston Natshona's The Island to remember the context. All I have to do is picture the two strong and weary Africans moving rocks from one pile to the other, hour after wearing hour, on a reconstructed Robben Island. My sense of Carol Churchill's serious money at the Royal Court is encapsulated in the cast's rendition of a foul-mouthed Chaz and Dave-type number that pilloried in word and action all that we found ugly about the city in the 1980s. Memory keeps theatre alive, and because it is selective, it keeps it alive in ways that are important to the individual. It is effectively a one-to-one experience, and yet it is a shared experience. So we begin with one paradox and end with another. That is probably what makes the medium so exciting. It is everything to everyone while there, but once gone, it can only be what we make of it.